Blog Talk Radio.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. Now, let's bust some pencils.
Good evening, Busted Pencils listeners. Welcome to the show. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. I am your host, Dr. Tim Slecker. Once again, Dr. Jed Hopkins is taking the Sunday evening off. Just to let you know, we've got quite a show tonight. We are going to be speaking. I just want to get you ready for this. Dumb teacher educators. Remember that. Dumb teacher educators. Now, in case you're wondering where that comes from, Robert Pondisco this week in the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Advancing Educational Excellence website or blog site, whatever you want to call it, penned a piece called Reforming Ed Schools from Within, along with Kate Stringer. But Robert Pondisco's the I should say the name correctly, I'm sorry. Robert Pondisco. Yeah, and my wife's sitting here going, oh, my God, you just really blew that. But Robert, you know, he starts out, and I just want to go, he quotes somebody by saying, the problem in American education is not dumb teachers. The problem is dumb teacher training. That's from cognitive scientist Dan Willingham from the University of Virginia. Okay. So get that. Let's listen to this. Quote, the problem in American education. Okay, there we go. The problem. We've finally found it. Thank you, Fordham Institute, for finding the problem, because God knows for 30-some years we've been trying to find the problem. So now we've found the problem. And, hey, for the first time, it's not teachers' fault. It's not dumb teachers. We're now going to move over and talk about it's dumb teacher training, or quote, come on, let's be honest what you're talking about. It's those dumb teacher educators. Okay? Those dumb teacher educators just keep screwing it up. It has nothing to do with students coming to school hungry or tired or sick or any of those issues. It's just these teacher educators that keep working with future teachers that send them out into the world unprepared to teach. In fact, let's read the beginning here. Well, I'm going to read it to you. Just to start all over again, quote, the problem in American education is not dumb teachers. The problem is dumb teacher training, University of Virginia cognitive scientist Dan Willingham recently wrote in the New York Times. Before I go on, first of all, there is no such job as cognitive scientist. Dan Willingham is a psychologist who is reframing his title, which is essentially a behavioral psychologist, okay? Stimulus response. Give a dog a treat, watch your mouth water. It's all about behaviorism. So this is just cognitive scientist really means a psychologist that can't let go of Skinnerian behaviorism, okay? So maybe we can call it new behaviorism. At least that sounds a little bit better for Dan Willingham. So Dan, you're a new behaviorist. Just thought you put there. But move on forward. Indeed, if there's any part, now this is Robert speaking, if there's any part of the education pipeline that's ripe for retooling, it's the way we prepare teachers. Complaints are legion, long-standing, and not unique to policy wonks. Wonk? Really? You use that word? Whatever. Okay. Teachers themselves routinely bemoan how poorly prepared their teacher training left them for the realities of classroom life. Fewer than half of new teachers describe their training. Was that like potty training? You know, I don't know what training is, but whatever. Their training left, they were poorly prepared, and it left them poorly prepared for the realities of classroom life. For fewer than half of the new teachers describe their training as, quote, very good. fewer than half said that their training was very good. Well, I guess that's horrible, but that was according to a 2012 survey by the American Federation of Teachers. And one more thing to throw in there. Only one in three new teachers felt prepared for teaching on their first day. Okay? One in three. Only one in three felt prepared on their very first day of the job. Now, think about that. What job did anybody start on their very first day and feel prepared? Other than the possibility of maybe taking tolls at like a turnpike or something like that, the preparation and the training needed. But the idea of that one in three people feel unprepared on their first day of teaching, in other words, you felt unprepared for the fact that you're about to embark on a 30-year career that will literally change the lives of thousands of kids, and one in three feel unprepared for that. I should say that I would be surprised that it's not 100% of everybody who starts their first day of teachers doesn't feel unprepared. Anyway, I'm rambling on and on and on, and I can continue to talk more about this, and we're going to. But we have some great guests tonight, and you've been seeing that I've been promoting the show as Talking to Dumb Teacher Educators. Well, we wanted to stay with Dan Willingham's consideration. I know he didn't call teacher educators specifically dumb, but he called teacher training dumb, quote dumb. And I'm sorry, but those of us who do teacher education, or as he wants to call it, teacher training, if you're going to call that dumb, you're calling us dumb. I've got two people on the phone right now, Morna McDermott, Denisha Jones, founders, directors, United Opt Out, but more importantly, dumb teacher educators. You hear that? I've got dumb teacher educators for tonight's show. Morna.
Hi, Tim.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you wonderfully. I want to ask you right away. I just want to know, what's it like to be dumb?
It's painful to be dumb. It is so painful to have a PhD in curriculum and research and evaluation after 10 years in the classroom teaching special ed with a master's degree, and then another 15 years preparing beginning teachers. I feel woefully ill-equipped for my task. It's a shame.
Okay.
I really think I need somebody like Benjamin Riley from New Schools Venture Fund to come in and show me how to do this.
Well, at least, you know, as they say with problems, the biggest part to, you know, rectifying problems is recognizing them. So you're at least honest in putting out there that you understand the fact that, hey, you're a dumb teacher educator. Now, the other person is my other guest, Denisha Jones. Denisha,
hi,
welcome.
Tim.
How are you? How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you? I'm good.
Okay,
how are you?
Great. So same question back to you that was to Morna. How does it feel to know that you're dumb?
Well, I think everyone expects that I'm dumb, Tim. I'm a woman. I'm black. I teach at a HBCU. No one's expecting me to be any better than dumb. So it just goes along with the mantra, and I'm just trying to, you know, keep everybody in line about what to expect and not to raise their expectations too much.
Oh, my. What? How many different ways can we go after that statement and look at different things? Okay. Well, anyway, we can have fun with that and come back to it. But Morna and Denisha, thank you for being the guest tonight on Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk. I mean, I do want to talk about this issue that was brought up in the Fordham Institute and then, you know, reiterated in the New York Times. And then this whole idea, too, that leads to this bigger organization of, quote, Deans for Impact. But I'm not ready to go there yet. But both of you are teacher educators. You've spent the time. You hear the criticism. Take the one that I ended with, though. And Denisha, I'll give this one to you. You hit this one first. Should we be surprised that one in three first-year teachers on their first day feel unprepared?
No, we should not be surprised, Tim. I remember when I took a position as a director of an early childhood campus center and a faculty member at a community college in California. And it was my first year, and I was up for, you know, for a review with the dean. And he said, well, how are you feeling? I said, you know, well, it's my first year teaching out of college at the college level. I taught while I was in college. You know, they let me teach some courses, but this is the first time. It was all on me. And I said, you know, I feel good at it, but, I'm learning new systems. And he goes, well, you know, research has shown when you talk to musicians and artists and painters, and they really say it takes about 5 years to become good at your craft. So just keep that in mind as you're evaluating yourself, that it's going to take a few years for you to get good. And that's always stuck with me. Funny, I only spent a year there because they didn't give me more time to get better. But it makes sense, right? It takes time. Teaching is really difficult. I think that statistic speaks to the fact that no amount of preparation can prepare you to be ready to do what teachers do every day. It is real work. It's not like anything anyone can prepare you for. I can talk to students till they're blue in the face. I can go over learning theories. I can go over assessment. Nothing really is going to prepare you for that first day. Even student teaching, which is a great experience, but you're under somebody else. You don't have the control of the classroom. And so I'd be hard-pressed, like you said. I wouldn't trust anybody who said, oh, I was ready to go my first day, and I did excellent, and I had no room for improvement. That's suspect on its own.
Yeah, that's a bit. Morna, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what Denisha said. I think it's the way that they've manipulated the narrative, and it's very intentional. I mean, the question isn't how many people feel prepared for their job in pretty much anything,
right,
on their first day. And, I mean, I'm even thinking, like, as a parent, how many of us who have kids, you know, you can be as prepared as you want and read all the books and do the Lamaze class, blah, 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 until you bring that child home. You know, you're like, holy hell, nothing prepares you for it. And, you know, I want to go to this framing of the narrative thing because it's very, very deliberate that we're saying, are teachers prepared? It's what I call a pedagogy of doubt. It's putting this question in the mind of the public that there's something fundamentally wrong. And I want to read something to you. It's a short paragraph because it's really important. And it comes from Eric Kubek.
Well, I just want to say, Maura, before you, is this coming off of your Educational Alchemy blog?
Yeah, it is. It's coming off of that, and I call it the pedagogy of doubt because it's what we did to K-12. You know, are schools failing? You know, you raise the specter of a question, and you target it towards public education, and in this case, you know, higher education, you know, teacher preparation programs. And this guy named Eric Kubek, who nobody's ever heard of, and I found this primary document written by him. And he's a protege of Paul Weyrich, who is the co-founder of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is gunning to privatize public institutions left and right, including colleges of ed. And this is what he writes. This is in his words. We will use guerrilla tactics to undermine the legitimacy of the dominant regime. We will take advantage of every available opportunity to spread the idea that there is something fundamentally wrong with the existing state of affairs. For example, we could have every member of the movement put a bumper sticker on their car that says something to the effect of, public education is rotten. Homeschool your kids. This will change nobody's mind immediately. No one will choose to stop sending his children to public schools immediately after seeing such a bumper sticker. But it will raise awareness and consciousness that there is a problem. So what you've got when you zoom out is you look at the framing of the narrative is coming from the ALEC agenda to dismantle colleges of education and public education as a fundamental democratic institution. I mean,
well,
this is their game plan.
Yeah, I mean, we're framed, and you know, next question to Denisha, but within the Fordham piece, you know, we're framed as kind of like this bastion where all we talk about is the culture of feeling good and soft understandings. When the hard data of cognitive science is knocking at the door, saying that look, you need to be responsible as teacher educators and start taking student achievement seriously, because all of this concern with poverty, health care, with issues of instruction, with quality of the curriculum, look, let that go. There's a whole new cognitive science that says, teacher educators, you're way behind. And Denisha, how do you answer somebody who says, hey, Denisha, what about this cognitive science and all this literature? How do you defend talking about, let's say, culturally relevant pedagogy?
Yeah, I mean, I like to tell people that one of the few things I did learn, you know, to become a teacher educator was the history of curriculum and instruction, right? We spent a great deal talking about it, and you need to know your history before you repeat it. So first I'd say this is not the first time a new cognitive science has been put forth to save public education. If you know the history of the development of curriculums in schools, we've gone through these phases before. And it's always led by something either international happening like Sputnik or business deciding that they want schools to produce a certain type of student, right? We had during the big manufacturing boom in the early 1920s, you know, businesses wanted to control school. They wanted to, you know, prepare workers who would go in and work these factory jobs, and they weren't really looking for critical thinking people who studied classical Western literature and that sort of thing. They wanted workers, and they got that. They designed the school curriculum like that. And then we saw a shift, and a new cognitive science came in, and it was John Dewey and people saying, you know, oh, how about we look at the whole child? How about we think about experiential learning? How about we make, you know, education engaging? And so we got that for a long time. And then we got into a new wave of the critical pedagogy. That's when we started looking at multiculturalism, social justice, what they like to call the liberal Marxist, you know, free air kind of stuff. And so so now we're seeing the pushback on that. And the pushback is this no-nonsense nurturing, this no excuses, this 100% accountability for the god of test scores. You know, so I'd say we've been here before, and this, like all bad ideas, will not last. And I'm not going to prepare teachers for a fad. It's a fad, and it'll go away. Unfortunately, I don't know how many children's education will be ruined as we're waiting for this fad to pass by, but it will pass by because history has told us it will shift. People will come to their senses. Hopefully it'll get better and not worse, and that's what I think a lot of us are working on, that when we finally do get to change, we see it's actually positive change. But, yeah, it's not going to last, and you shouldn't invest in science just the new science just because it's new. You want to look in things that are true and tested, and that's what we do as teacher educators. We know what helps students learn best. All students, not even, you know, specifically in this area, but we know the research and what helps students solve best. And it ain't no excuses obedience training or, you know, fly-by-night teacher education programs where you don't know who Piaget is or Dewey is or any of the people who have, like, study child development and learning. That's not what we know. That's not going to last. And so I challenge anyone to, you know, we've had 10 years of, or more than 10 years of No Child Left Behind. Where's your proof that this works? You guys have been data driven, and here in DC, we've been data driven for 8 years, and ain't nothing changed. In fact, the achievement gap has grown bigger. So how can you tell me that this is working when your own research that you love to support doesn't bear out those statistics?
Well, I mean, Morna, hold on just a sec. I mean, the answer to that question, I think, according to these people, would be, well, of course, because we have dumb teachers as a result of dumb teacher training, which is the result of dumb teacher educators. And so we can't have effective data-driven instruction when we don't have teachers themselves who have been prepared for the world of teaching as a science, and instead still see it as this kind of soft psychological place where we try to make kids feel good and we don't worry about the knowledge. Morna?
Yeah, I was going to say everything Denisha said is, you know, I agree with her completely, except I disagree on one thing. It's not a fad, and this is what scares me to death. I mean, what she's saying is true. It's a fad. That what we're doing is we're being duped with advertising, and advertising is replacing sound research as the policy-making, you know, vehicle du jour. The problem is it's not a fad, because when it's all said and done and the people wake up and realize this is a train crash, by then I'm terrified that colleges of education, like their K-12 counterparts, will have been dismantled and replaced by Relay Graduate Schools and Teach for Americas, because that's what they're gunning for. And they're replacing, you know, culturally relevant pedagogy and student-centered learning and these things on ideological and economical terms. Ideologically, it's offensive to this extreme far-right notion, right? Like Denisha said, it's this Marxist ideology, it's the communists are coming. It's you know, it's this crazy sort of narrative that they are so affronted by that they want to dismantle colleges of education on ideological grounds. And secondly, from a market-driven standpoint, it's profitable to now take these so-called failing institutions, right, colleges of ed, and replace them with Relay Graduate Schools and TFA and these other organizations that are tied to Deans for Impact and the National Council of Teacher Quality, NCTQ. I mean, they're all connected by money, and they're all connected by the same false advertising claim. There's no data to support anything that they're claiming, and but they're running the show.
Well, I mean, so you just hit on something, so I'll move to this. So in Pondiscio's article in the Fordham, he moves on, and I'm going to again quote, and let's bring this back up. Some schools of education have largely received a pass in our accountability mad era. First of all, I have a real problem with that sentence in and of itself, because teacher education has not had a pass. We've essentially had our lives ruined, but just like everybody else. But attempts at even modest reform typically bring howls of protest. So coming from Morna McDermott and Denisha, you guys are howling in protest, and that's why you're on my show tonight. That reality prompted Robert Pianta, yeah, the head of UVA's education school and one of the deans for impact, to write recently that he was, quote, embarrassed that professionals responsible for the preparation of teachers seem to oppose so adamantly the efforts to evaluate the competence of the workforce they produce. Now, there is a dean of one of the research institutions in this country, the dean of the School of Education, heading up this new group, Deans for Impact, that I wanted to introduce. And these deans, and I'll, you know, just for everybody's clear conscience, I am a dean, but I guess I'm not a dean for impact. I'm a dean for
You're
no
a dumb
impact.
Dean.
Yeah,
thank
I'm a dumb
God
dean.
You're not a dean for impact.
Well, yeah, thank God I'm not a dean for impact. I'm a dumb dean talking to dumb teacher educators, and we like doing it that way. But this idea here that now it's truly moved into a legitimate academic college of education at the University of Virginia, and supposedly a legitimate dean who has academic credentials, that has allowed now the fact that their school, the School of Education, or the College of Education, UVA, to be corrupted by this scientific measurement, economic-driven BS.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with that, Morna?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have to admit in full disclosure that I am the fine product of the doctoral program of UVA's College of Education. I've had Dr. Pianta as one of my professors. I don't remember him being quite the asshat that he is in that article, but, you know, that was, you know, 16 years ago. But, you know, UVA is one of those institutions that is ground zero for corporate-style reform. I mean, it's where Rick Hess hails from. I remember him doing a presentation back when I was a doctoral student on how schools should be run more like businesses or corporations. And I remember, and I didn't know anything about corporate reform at that time. I was very naive. It wasn't on the radar. But I remember looking at the person next to me and thinking, that is the dumbest idea I've ever heard of. Like, who would do that? You know, so UVA has an interest of all kinds in promoting this corporate-style reform. And it's interesting, if you look at some of his other publications, Dr. Pianta's, he has a book that was co-funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, for example. So, you know, you've got some curious underlying motives here that don't make the press.
Well, Denisha. So, you're also at a School of Education. Do you have a dean for impact, or do you? Well, I wouldn't want to, let's not go anywhere further. But deans for impact, what do we make of it?
No, unfortunately, I don't have a dean for impact. I have a dean for children, for primarily children of color, and for Black excellence in education. So I'm fortunate in that area. I have to make a disclosure, as Morna did too. I don't know Dr. Pianta, but he was the producer, the creator of a measurement system for teacher interactions that he calls CLASS, Classroom Assessment Scoring System. And I've been involved with CLASS. I've been trained on CLASS pre-K. I did a grant with DC pre-K teachers and their assistants on improving their CLASS scores. And so I'm not surprised. Well, I'm a little surprised that he would take that tone. I definitely believe he's on the business side of making money off of teacher evaluation. His CLASS product makes a lot of money for the company that, you know, he created out of it, and it's partnered. It's not at UVA, but it's in Charlottesville, so it's still linked to him because it was his research that created the assessment. But I'm not surprised to hear them say that because, I mean, some people are in it for the money, you know, because they're gonna make this. This is not going to come cheap to school districts. We'll show you how to evaluate teachers at a cost, or prepare teachers at a cost. So that, and like Lorna said, other people are in it for the ideology, right? But a lot of people, it's just a part of the domino system. They want to privatize the public schools. And to do that, you need to get the parents on board, you need to get the teachers who are resisting out of the way, and you need to get the people preparing the teachers to be resistors out of the way. It's a domino effect. So they've got their charter schools, they're coming in, they're getting the schools. They've got Teach for America, Relay Graduate School, and Teach New Orleans, or, you know, any of these other insta-teacher programs, creating the teachers they want. But now they have to battle with the teachers coming out of traditional teacher prep programs who are not, you know, just laying down and taking this nicely. So now that's why they have to come over teacher prep programs as well. As someone who's used, you know, Dr. Pinata's assessment scoring system, it depends on what your goal is for evaluating teachers, right? If you use it to say, hey, you are a bad teacher, boom, you know, one more of these and you're out, then that's one way. Or you use it to say, okay, this is where you did well, this is where you have some room for improvement, let's do professional development around the areas for improvement, and then let's test you again and see how you do. I did that with 26 pre-K 3 and 4 teachers and assistants, and they all showed improvement. I wasn't trying to set them up as bad teachers. I was trying to help them improve using a measure that I do believe is not harmful to use to evaluate teachers. But these people are not coming in saying, hey, teachers might be struggling, why don't we work with teacher education programs to help them improve based upon our fine research. They're saying these programs suck and we just know it because we know it and we're going to come in and dismantle them.
Right.
I mean, who takes that kind of attitude? Like, it just shows where they're coming from. They're not, teachers are in, children are not in their best interest. They want to be right. They want to, and they don't have the data to back it up that there's anything wrong with teacher ed programs. They use low enrollment, like Morna talked about in her article, which is actually not necessarily mean that it's because teacher education programs are bad that they're facing low enrollment. And also, I want to challenge you, what other profession does this to their people? What other profession just has people who are not doing what they do come in and say, you know what, Georgetown Medical School, you suck. Your doctors are not good enough, and we're going to come in and standardize and change everything because we say so. I mean, no one allows that to happen, but for some reason, it's okay to do that to teachers and teacher educators, which I think speaks volumes to the issue that nobody, you know, the people in power just don't respect us, and they'd rather move us out the way to the people who have money and have, you know, financial ends in all this than to actually invest in good teachers and good schools.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that, boy, you hit so many things there, but, I mean, two specifically, really, the idea that I think one of the biggest things is that there's an absolute fear of teacher education as a critical methodology in which to undermine and or expose some of the flaws, whether it be in the curriculum, whether it be in society, whether it be in the economic system, that's one of the first attacks and the reasons why they come after teacher education. And they need to be clear about that and just say, look, we just don't like the fact that you're teaching kids to be critical of their own society. The other part, though, too, they continue to link this. And throughout this piece on the Fordham's website, it is constantly referring to the fact that, and this is to me is such the reductionist measurement technocratic bullshit, is that everything is student achievement driven. And they say it constantly, that if you're not doing anything, if you're not doing something that increases student achievement, you're wasting somebody's time. And let's be honest with what they're saying here, is if you're not raising test scores, you're wasting people's time. And that's the bottom line here, is to come at that and create that false narrative that we've got failing schools based on low test scores, and therefore the way to fix this, again, it's the same type of narrative that was used in K-12, now coming back to supposedly fix teacher education. We need to be worried about the achievement, which is actually the test scores, and you guys need to stop worrying about Paulo Freire, John Dewey, the history of American education. You need to not look at the longstanding aspects of segregation and its effect on students of color in the South and now again in the North and the new segregation that's happening through charter schools. We don't want you talking about that, and so we've created, and more than I think your piece, which has now been picked up by the Academe blog, is this is what you're hinting at. We don't want this narrative exposed. So let's create a crisis, have people look the other way, and then tell teacher educators, stop doing what you're doing and start focusing on student test scores, because that, in the end, is all that really matters. Both of you, last statement. Morna.
Well, this is exactly what they want. They start with a manufactured crisis, and then it becomes a real crisis, because this is what's going to happen. Because of the Great Teachers and Principals Act, which started back in, like, I think 2011, but it's still in the hopper somewhere, ultimately what they're going to do is attach whether or not you can graduate from a college of education to demonstrated test performance out in the field, right? It's a value-added measure for undergraduate students. So my interns have to demonstrate that they've raised test scores. And if they don't, they won't get their diploma, nor will they get certified. So a couple things are going to happen. One, they're going to be terrified to go work in communities that are economically challenged because we know those children won't do as well on the tests. So we're no longer going to prepare them to work in, high-needs areas or with high-needs children. Secondly, the low enrollment claim, oh, my God, the sky is falling, will become a reality because nobody's going to want to go to a college of ed where they're not even guaranteed a diploma if they can't raise test scores on a faulty test from tests from, you know, bogus VAM measurements. So they're making a real crisis in education. So they're really going to shove us out by force by creating policies that they know are going to destroy us. And the only thing we can do is fight back. And if we don't fight back, we're doomed.
And you know what? Hey, Denisha, you got a minute? We've got a caller on the line. I didn't even say so. Let's get to the caller. Caller with the area code 720. What's happening?
Hey, Tim, it's Peggy.
Hey, Peggy, what's up?
Hey,
Peggy.
Hey, everybody. No, I've just been listening in, and you know, I as you guys know, my school is being completely infected by the Relay Graduate School, and I was looking online at this district document this weekend for my district, and we are literally being labeled as a Relay Leadership School. They also have, in my district, 5 University of Virginia Leadership Schools. So what's interesting, yeah, and it's in this document that, you know, anybody can get online, and I'm like, wow, not only are we just, you know, dabbling in this nightmare, they are now labeling us as one of those schools. And I think what is fascinating from, you know, being on the inside of this and watching this come down the pike last year, when it happened and I was trying to explain to people what was happening, no one, absolutely no one, including the union, had heard of Relay Graduate School. And so just to give you an idea of what we're doing here to fight back against this, is our RAISE caucus is going to start going around and talking to all the local unions and passing out information to explain what this is, because in Denver, I believe they trained 75 principals for this principal relay academy. In Aurora, where I work, I want to say there were 7. But you think 75 in Denver, that is terrifying. I mean, that is infiltrating so much of the district. And so we are going to start going around and speaking to the union AR rep meetings to share information on this, because the truth is nobody knows what's going on, and now they're going to set up a campus here in Denver. So you know, if it's getting this credibility in Denver especially, it's going to go rampant. It's going to go like wildfire, because other people that are struggling in urban diverse schools are going to latch on to it. So it's pretty scary stuff.
Well, it is scary stuff, and we see, you know, you see that in Denver. And so the fact when people say, you know, Tim, Morna, Denisha, even Peggy, you guys, you know, you're really over the top worried about something that's not that big a deal. Colleges of education traditionally are going to stay in place. They are the place for preparation of teachers. And Peggy, you come back and say, you know, no, I'm sorry, but we have evidence directly in Denver that Relay Graduate Schools, and again, Relay Graduate Schools, you know, refuse to hire traditional PhDs, at least, you know, from the literature that I've seen in curriculum instruction, totally bemoan the whole idea of history and the philosophy and the deep foundations that we have in American education and its commitment to social justice. Those are now becoming the teacher training or the teacher professional development institutions that schools are now using to say that we're sounding some kind of, you know, Chicken Little, sky is falling, I think is, you know, is also part of their plan. But let's get real. If you're out there right now and you're a teacher and you're in a school district and you're hearing Relay Graduate School of Education, first understand that there is no such accredited institution that is recognized by any real credentialing place called Relay Graduate School of Education. That's essentially the same as calling themselves McDonald's, okay? Sign up, come and get a credential. I know we're coming up on time, but Denisha, I wanted to give you another chance to weigh in here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even like, I know that's their name, but they're the farthest thing from a graduate school. And it's funny because, you know, we had to go through so many hoops to do what we do, right, to be teacher educators. So in D.C., the D.C. is not a state, but we have the Office of State Superintendent of Education, OSSE, and they give out, you know, institutions, they give them the right to license teachers. So they kind of like accredit us. We have to tell them all of our courses, all of our programs, all of our faculty, how many PhDs they have, all this stuff. And so they list it. So when I started looking into what I was calling the deprofessionalization of teaching, you know, through Teach for America and all these programs, I started looking to see who certifies teachers in D.C., who does OSSE give the right to. And mind you, this is D.C. There are about 9 colleges and universities within the metro area. There were 9 institutions, and only 4 of them were universities. 5 of them were Teach for America, the New Teacher Project, and 3 other ones that I've never heard of. And so they don't have to go through the things that we go through. And that's really interesting that you'd set it up that way. It's like charter school teachers not being evaluated by the same evaluation as public school teachers. Or so you create this program and you let them do whatever they want, but then you hold us to these higher standards and then wonder why we're not producing the same results for people like them, you know? And so it's just a system set up to fail. And, I mean, when I look at my students at Howard University who have spent a lot of money to come to the school to become teachers – and pretty much graduate and say, hey, my friend didn't go to school to become a teacher, but she's also teaching. And, I mean, that's a devaluing of their degree, right? And then for a long time, we were told that's how you want to be, that if you want to be a teacher, this is what you have to do. And now the state is saying, no, you don't have to do that. Well, where's my refund to Sallie Mae? Like, this is serious. People are investing. Teachers are the most educated people out there are teachers. They have the most advanced degrees of anyone, right? And so here they are doing all this professional development, all this training, and for what? So that somebody can come in after getting a BA in anything and be a teacher in 5 weeks? Like, I see legal challenges there. I'd like to see someone sue a state for my worthless degree that you made worthless when you allowed these other organizations like Relay Wannabe Graduate School to come in and prepare teachers, right? Because we didn't do this. I mean, I didn't go to school just because I wanted to. I went to school because I had to, because I wanted to be a kindergarten teacher, and that's what I was told to do. And now they're kind of just changing the game on you. So I think it does pose some interesting challenges. And, again, I think money's driving this. We have to follow the money. Like Relay Graduate School chose those schools in Denver that Peggy's dealing with because they knew they can come in, flash some cash in front of them, promise to make everything okay, and really just suck the life out of them, you know? And until we realize that however money they throw at us, it's not going to be enough to buy what they're selling, you know? We have to stay true to our belief that that's not the kind of education we want for our children, for our teachers, for anybody.
No,
and Denise, Tim, I have to go. Say, I've got 8 people downstairs waiting for dinner.
Go ahead. Last word before you go.
Be informed. Know what's going on. It's only a conspiracy if it's not really happening. The facts are there. The primary documents are there and the evidence there. We just have to be, we have to have that come to Jesus moment as a society and realize this is really happening and it will continue to happen until we stop it. So thank you for having me on the show. Love you, Denise.
Hey.
Love you, Tim.
Thanks. Morton McDermott, Towson University. There you go. Denisha Jones, Howard University. Thank you, Denisha, for tonight's appearance. I mean, we've got a lot more to talk about, but Denisha, we'll definitely have you back on, too. I just want to remind everybody that you were listening and you are listening to Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk. Just remember that if you want to receive our trending newsletter, you can go to the webpage bustedpencils.com and sign up under subscribe. Make sure that you're also checking out if you're into syndication. Look at the mx2media.com/bustedpencil site. Follow me on Twitter @Slecker. Or @BustedPencils. And again, as my friend Jed always likes to end the show, and Denisha and Morna, you are not dumb educators. You are, in fact, truly out there busting pencils. Keep busting pencils, and we'll talk to everybody and see everybody next week.